Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic. Let's see, housekeeping. You can raise your hand to be recognized by the meeting chair in the participants window. You can change your name as to how it's presented. We encourage everybody to pay attention to how you're presenting yourself online. You can stop and start video and not have yourself be visible. So these Zoom meetings are open to the public. We will be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting only. When the Seven Tradition comes around, we are going to provide links to Tidewater Intergroup, AA.org, and Virginia Area, AAVirginia.org. And we're going to encourage everybody. Simple Actions is not taking donations during the quarantine at this time. And we're just asking everyone to consult the conscience of their own hearts and contribute to any of those service entities as they see fit. So I'm going to allow you to unmute if you wish to open with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? If you could just raise your virtual hand, we would just like to say hello and welcome. Josh, C, welcome. John, welcome. Glad you guys are here. Right on. We'll get some of the men maybe to put phone numbers out there or text you directly. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And let's see, we're going to do step four, part one tonight. It's going to be all about resentments. So be sure to come back next week for fear and sex. But tonight, step four, part one, resentments. And please help me welcome our panel. We have Donald and Karen. So I'm David, going to.
I think it's part two.
Yeah. Did we do resentments last week?
I thought we did.
Was I out smoking dope last week? So it's fear and sex, huh? Okay.
Ask Donald and Karen. They know. It is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it's fear and sex tonight. I'm gonna have to download those paragraphs. Oh my. Okay, bear with me, kids. let's see.
Sorry about that.
No, thank you, man. I better to catch it now. I gotta quit smoking dope before the meeting. Okay, just one more second. I'm gonna download that. And then I'm going to share it. It's like a well-oiled machine around here. Debbie's smiling. All right. Almost there. Does that look right? Yes. Okay, so let's see. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory ourselves. We're gonna start tonight on page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and his wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Karen?
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic. I guess to get some of the technicalities out of the way, my sobriety date is February 14th, 2018. I have a sponsor who knows that she sponsors me, and I also have the pleasure of taking other women through the book. Step four is always, I guess, a daunting step for people. I've heard a lot of my fellow sobriety family say that they hated step four, they drug their feet on it. My step four, I did not have that experience. I didn't drag my feet. I didn't really take a whole lot of time on it, only because I wanted to get to the character defects, because I thought if I could just figure out where I went wrong and what was wrong with me, I could fix it, because that's me. I'm a fixer. So I thought this was just going to show me all my issues and I was going to fix it, and then I could leave, because I didn't want to stay here. But God had other plans for me. And when I went through the fourth step, and it talks about fear, when I came in the rooms, I was the person that sat by myself. I would stare you down, and I basically gave out the energy of, don't even try to talk to me, because I will hit you. And it, you know, I like to think of it as I was just this big, bad, independent woman, and I've just, you know, I need my space, and I don't want anyone near me, and I don't like you, and you look funny, and you smell funny, and you were in a dark room. You ain't about to come up sitting next to me. But it was really because I was terrified of each and every one of you. I was terrified of the rooms. I was terrified of the people. I would show up late. I would leave early. I wouldn't talk to anyone. And when it says it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve, that was my whole life, was reacting out of fear to people, places, and things, and then being mad that I would step on the toes of my fellows and they would react and they would respond. And I thought, you know, I don't deserve this. How dare you? Like, obviously, I'm in a, you know, I'm either in a lot of pain, or I'm either scared, or I'm angry, and you just don't understand. And all of it was backed by fear. And then I would, again, react, step on the toes of my fellows, and then be mad when they retaliated. And that was my life. And I set the ball in motion, and it says it's an evil and corroding thread, and it really is. Anything that in my life that fear has touched has instinctively gone downhill, whether it's my position at work, my position with my family, how I'm perceived by my friends, how I'm perceived in relationships. Anything where fear can be let in will continually take a downward spiral. And that's because I don't know how to handle life. I don't know how to live without fear. Which for me, fear meant anger. I didn't know how to not be angry. I didn't know how to not react aggressively to the world or to people, because I was too afraid of getting hurt. And fear ran my life, and I didn't even realize it until I started taking my step four and looking into my fear inventory and looking at what I was scared of and diving into some of those uncomfortable emotions. And I was like, man, I'm scared of everything. And my fears, unfortunately, are very contradictive of each other. So, you know, I'm scared of dying alone, but I'm scared of relationships. You know, I'm scared of living my life for corporate America and never having a family. And then I'm terrified of children. Everything's contradictive of each other. So I'm frozen in my own life. I can't move forward. So I'm stuck in not even the present. I'm ashamed of my past. I'm scared of my future. I drink so I don't have to think of either. And I absolutely have no quality of life because I'm frozen in fear and drunk on top of it. And fear ended up stealing part of who I was as a person. Fear took away being able to adventure out and enjoy life, enabling me to have relationships, enabling me to be a daughter, to be a friend, to be a sister, to be someone employable, to be someone that people even wanted to work for. It stole so many parts of who I came to be after letting go of all that fear. And looking back, I lost so much time. And that's a fear, is losing track of my life. And all of a sudden I'm 50 and I'm like, what did I do with my life? And now I don't have to. I don't have to fear that. I don't have to fear waking up having been frozen in my own life, because writing down my fears, facing them, looking at them and saying, you know what? I understand. I understand why I'm aggressive. I understand why I'm angry. I understand why I'm lashing out. And I can choose not to live that way anymore. And I can choose to live my life today. And I can choose to move forward and to not be ashamed of looking back on what I did or didn't do. And I don't have to be scared of looking into the future of what could or could not happen. And I can be in the present today. And that's all I have on this part. Thank you.
Thank you. Donald?
He's muted.
Yeah, I know. Thanks, okay. JT. Can you unmute yourself, Donald? I'm hitting unmute on you, but it's not letting you up. There you go.
Do I need to say all that again?
Yes, yes, you do.
Okay. Donald Smith, alcoholic.
Hey, Donald.
Hey. And my sobriety date is October. I rehearsed it. Now I can say it. my sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. My home group is the West Kenton Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a book study and an open and a discussion meeting, and then both the meetings are open. And we also have one online now that we're under quarantine. And I do have a sponsor, but I talk to him on occasion. You know, I'm just going to start off by saying that the fear inventory was one of the most. I was told a long time ago that the most important thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, the two things you need to learn how to do, is inventory and prayer. That the whole program revolves around those two things. Because what happens to a guy like me is that I end up letting myself get in the way of my relationship with the power greater than myself. I block the sunlight of the spirit. And there's a variety of ways I do it. And one of the ways I do it is, well, I will say later on, I'll tell you more about this, but I think the primary reason I always do anything is out of fear. When I'm in the middle of my self-reliance and my self-centeredness and my alcoholism, however that gets expressed, it's always because of fear. So when I was drinking, you couldn't have told me I had any fears. I mean, I was You know, I'd drive any place drunk. I would go any place drunk. I would do anything drunk. I mean, I had a great time. I didn't, you know, the only time I had fear is if the police pulled me over and I was drunk, or if I had to go to a, you know, see an alcohol and treatment counselor and they were going to try to tell me not to drink anymore or put me in a nut house, if you will. You know, but for the most part, I was more or less fearless about everything. But what happened is that once I did the inventory, I came to realize the most important sentence, I think, in this whole part is that fear is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of my existence is shot through with it. And what is so important to me that when I read that the first time, oh yeah, that's fine. I got that. You know, I moved on. I read it. I understood what it said and I moved on. But what I found over the years is that that is more true than I had ever, ever imagined. And it says an evil, the fabric of my existence is shot through with fear. That tells me, and I'll tell you about it a little later on, that's who I am. That as an alcoholic, the main thing, you know, I always was uncomfortable before I started drinking when I was in my, you know, I thought it was my teens. So I had all that adolescent angst and all that stuff that you do when you're like 10, 11, 12, but it goes way back before that. But I always had some gnawing thing inside of me that said I wasn't right, that the rest of the world was one way and I'm not the way the rest of the world is. And I didn't understand why I felt that way. And I think looking back on it now, it was fear. I was fearful when I was 5. The first thing I can remember when I was about 3 years old, I had fear involved in it. It went through my whole life. And it set in motion trains of circumstances that I felt I didn't deserve. Self-pity is the most unbelievably wonderful motivation to do the horrible things that I did. And the problem with self-pity is that I learned how to live with it for the long time. So I play it forward into my sobriety and I can sit in self-pity for a while. But it's all this stuff is fear-based. So I'll end it there because there's a lot more I want to talk about once we get down a little farther on. So thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Donald. We're going to continue on page 68. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Karen?
There's a lot of good stuff in those two paragraphs. So I will say that when I first came through the steps, I was... very against the concept of God. I had a really hard time with my third step. I remember telling my sponsor, I said, look, I'm not religious and I don't really believe in what Christianity teaches. However, you're trying to make me make a God and that's blasphemy. And if there is a hell, I'm not about to make you trick me to go to hell. And because that's how my mind works. And she just kind of looked at me and was like, okay, Karen, just let's calm down. You know, so it was, I don't believe in God, but I'm not going to make one because it's blasphemy. And I'm very self-reliant. I'm very much about You know, I grew up in a house where my dad expected miracles. My dad just thought that one day, the way God would provide for you was one day he would win the lottery and one day he would just wake up and his health would be amazing. But he, you know, he wouldn't put any action towards any steps to have a better financial situation, have better health. And so it was always a frustrating thing between us, where I would see him being lazy and not doing what he needed to do, but then being like, oh, well, God will provide, which that never happened. And I was very much like, no, like, God helps those who help themselves, and I'm going to make it on my own, and I'm going to go through life on my own, and I'm going to get it. I'm going to do it through self-reliance, and I don't need anybody or anything. And that was kind of my mentality. And even, you know, it says, we laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. That was me. I thought spirituality was a cop-out. I thought that, you know, where it says, all men of faith have courage. I read that and thought, no, all men of faith have stupidity. they just follow this religion or this God or this teaching to their death because they're just so devoted to this dumb idea. And I was very condescending about it. And I was like, no, if you're spiritual, you're just stupid. You just, you know, think that everything's going to be handed to you. And and it's crazy now because, you know, I never wanted to rely on a God. I never wanted to rely on anyone. And my biggest thing is I never wanted to be a victim. I hate that word. I hate feeling like that. And that was my biggest thing. I felt like relying on God made me a victim of life. And I'm not a victim. I'm not weak. And I'm going to make it on my own. And what that looks like is me running my life into the ground and living in fear and acting out of fear in such a way. And there is a better way. When I started giving my fears over to my higher power, as I understand him, her, it to be, I still don't define what my higher power is. Some days it's God. Some days it's Yahweh. Some days it's just, hey, dude. I don't define it. I don't understand it. And for an alcoholic like me who wants to control and analyze and understand everything, I need to be able to let go and say, I don't understand this, but I'm going to trust it. And I've been able to, you know, even today I got thrown a curveball at work and immediately fear rose up in me. And I was like, what? God, I need you to take this real quick. I don't need it. I don't want it. Because, you know, if I have it, I'm not going to act right. And just like with alcohol, if I have it, I'm not going to act right. Don't expect me to. And I'm able to rely and trust upon something greater than myself. And today, it's so peaceful. I'm able to give it over today, which I didn't understand how to do that at first. If you don't, talk to your sponsor, pray a little bit. But it took me a while to figure out kind of how to actually hand stuff over, such as my fears, my higher power. And being, you know, I love this line, we trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. And I have to remind myself of that. I am not the end all be all. I am not a great and amazing creator. I am finite. I am in a moment in life. And I am not the beginning and the end, the alpha, the omega, however you want to phrase it. I didn't make life. I didn't do anything special. I'm just me. I'm just Karen. And if I'm not careful, I'm going to think I'm the ish and I can do whatever I want and I'm gonna make it in life and I'm this and I'm that. And, you know, I will, you know, think that I am God and I will run the show. And I have to remind myself that I am finite. I am not infinite. I am just a grain of sand in the lapse of time on earth. And I have to remind myself of that and not let my ego get big. And I love how it says, he enables us to match calamity with serenity. I have found that to be more than true in my life today. I didn't see it back then, but I've been able to get through a lot of craziness and come out the other side when I should not have. And even today, you know, things, it says that even things fancied are real. We run into situations fancied are real. We aren't to get angry, I believe, if my mind is correct. You never know. And that was the thing, was dealing with things that are fancied for me or things that I think in my head are people against me, but they're really not. Those are easy to deal with. Easy peasy. Cool. It's in my head. Thank you, sponsor. I'm just going to throw that to the side, maybe make an amend, and move on. We're fine. It's when you hit the real stuff that sucks. And that's when fear comes in. And that's when I go crazy. And I have to call my sponsor. And I've called my sponsor and I've said, I feel crazy. I feel like I'm losing my mind. This is what's happening. Is this in my head? And she said, no, that's real. That's real stuff you're going through. And it really sucks. And there's nothing you can do about it. When she said there's nothing you can do about it, I was like, crap. Because I want to control. I will go. I turned my last command upside down out of fear because I didn't want to go limited duty to a hospital to take care of my issues. And I was so fearful, I ended up threatening a therapist. I ended up almost coming across a desk at someone. I ended up almost busting down my commanding officer's door of the entire base and pretty much flipped everything upside down. That is me when I'm scared. That is me thinking I'm in control and that I'm going to get my way. That is Karen, alcoholically. And that was without alcohol in my system at the time, FYI. And so today, you know, when I call my sponsor and she's like, no, this is real. This is happening. Okay. And then my first thought is don't bust down doors. Don't yell at people. Don't go across desks. And I'm like, but what can I do? What can I do? And she said, just pray about it. Give it over to your higher power. See what happens. And the situation happened to deal with my job and my supervisor. And I was like, oh, man, come on. And I wanted to go off and tell this guy what he was and how he acted and how he made me feel. And, you know, I went into work every day with fear. And I went into work every day expecting to work with this supervisor. And when I sat down and prayed about it, I said, you know what, God, I'm scared. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm in a situation I'm very uncomfortable with. And I need you to take it and I need you to help me. And I went into work every day. I prayed. I took moments. It was not, the days were not great. I had to take the pause, pray, proceed approach. I locked myself in a closet and prayed. I called my sponsor sometimes during the day or after work and was like, I don't think I can do this. And I was able to make it through my day. And even at the end of the day, I had peace, knowing that I conducted myself the way I felt my higher power wanted me to conduct myself. And at the end of the day, I don't work for him anymore. And the situation turned out so much better than if I would have reacted out of fear to this individual. And I was able to go through the situation and I was able to work with this individual for almost a year. And it turned out fine. And it was because I paused, I prayed, and I proceeded and I gave it over to God. And I said, you know what? I'm scared. I don't know what to do. It's not going to be chaotic. And that's matching his serenity, my higher power serenity, with my calamity. Because that's what I do. I run amok. And I'm able to respond today rather than react. I'm able to realize the chaos inside of me because I'm an alcoholic. Peace and serenity, that's boring. When I felt serenity for the first time, I thought I was clinically depressed. I told my sponsor, I said, I think I'm depressed. And she went, why? I was like, I'm not. I'm not really sad, but I'm not angry. And that's kind of my emotional spectrum. I'm cruising. I'm chilling. And she went, oh, that sounds like serenity. I went, nope, I don't like this. This has to stop. Because I'm an alcoholic. I am bred in chaos. And that's what I create, is chaos in my life, in your life, in whoever is around me. Chaos ensues. And that's who I am, with or without a drink. And today, I'm still chaotic. I want chaos. But my higher power, because my higher power is infinite and more than me, my higher power fills in the gaps where I am not sufficient and fills in those gaps so that I can make it through life and still hold my head up high at the end of the day and be okay. And I don't have to react in fear today because of it, because I rely spiritually on a higher power, which I thought was the weakest, dumbest thing in the world. And today it's made my life 1,000 times better. And that's all I have on these two chapters. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Karen. Donald, you are unmuted, my brother.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Karen. Well, the thing about doing the fear inventory for me, and the thing about doing the book that I love so much, is that I initially did it, and I got really positive results. I mean, I had great results. I came to realize that I had all kinds of fears that I didn't realize I had. Most of them were because I was afraid I was going to lose something I had, or I wasn't going to get what I wanted. And all of those things are self-reliance and self-seeking, which I think are basically the same thing. I didn't realize I had all this fear inside of me because I drank all the time. And to me, that was liquid courage. That's what I did. I could face anything drunk, even going to see my probation officer when I had to go. I, you know, as long as you didn't ask me to take a piss test, I had no fear. So I was fine. But it was a major revelation to me, I think, to come to realize and find out how much fear I actually had in my life. And so doing the inventory and then reading with my doing the fifth step with my sponsor at the time, I got a lot out of it, and it helped change my life and calm me down a little bit. But here's what I like about the book so much. This thing is relevant even as you get further and further and further. As a matter of fact, it's more important the more time I get. And I can go back and look at things and get a new perspective on them and come to realize how the amount of crazy I produce outside of me is only a small portion of the crazy going on inside of me. And so I think that if I can somehow in my mind manage this crazy going on inside of me, I'll be okay. My problem is that I came to the belief at some point that I was born this way, and this was the best it was going to get. I've heard it said sometime in AA, you can look at somebody and go, that's the best, that person is going to get the best they'll ever have and never get any better. And I think sometimes that's true, but I don't believe that's true all the time, to be honest with you. But that's what I heard in my mind, and that's what I believe. So I would go through my life. I'd have these periods. Now, let me just say this before I get started down this road. I beat this drum all of the time. People have heard me talk about it. I'm going to do it again because it's so important to me, and it changed my life so significantly. I will say that in some cases, this may not be you. So, you know, that's fine. But I think alcoholics are alcoholics. And so You know, when it says that I'm a victim of depression and fear and all these other things, I believe that, and I believe that's true. You know, the other thing I'll say this real quickly about God, you know, I had to marry the finite. I was an atheist, so I had to marry the finite with the infinite, or it wasn't going to work for me. If I have the finite and the finite matched up, none of this works because it's all BS. It goes away when I die, or it goes away when you die. It's all transitory, the earth, the world, all that stuff. So, you know, I read this thing a while back and said, we still have God because we still believe in language and grammar. So we got to call this thing something. You can call it like the hell you want. And you can believe what it is as long as you got something. My sponsor told me once, he said, we don't care what you have. We care that you have. So we don't matter what it is. So having said all that, you know, my life is cruising along, about 12 years sober. I'm doing great. I've got a house. I got a car. I got things I never had before, a house, a car, a couple girlfriends, a nice job. I'm just going. And guess what happens? I start having anxiety, is what I called it. I'm all freaked out. I'm forcing myself to go to work. I can't seem to be comfortable. And it comes, and then it goes. And then it comes, and then it goes. And I don't know, and I said, well, this is the way I'm going to have to live. And one day I was in the middle of all this stuff, and I told my sponsor finally that I was having this problem. And I said, I'm full of anxiety. And he goes, Donald, in his raspy ass voice, he goes, Donald, you're suffering. You have a $10 word for a 4-letter problem. And I said on the phone, I said, what are you talking about? And he says, you know what I'm talking about. Think about it. Call me tomorrow. Click. It's like, you know. So I thought about it and I couldn't figure it out. And so for about 3 or 4 days, I finally asked him, I said, look, you know, and he says, you need to write a fear inventory. And it's interesting that this little bit that we're reading, that we're the assignment for the class today, my joke, it doesn't tell you how to do the inventory for the fear inventory. It skips that whole cell. I review my fears thoroughly. I put them on paper. Even though I had no resentment in connection with them, I asked myself, why did I have them? That's column number 2. Column number 3 is what self-reliance was good as far as it went. How did these affect my life? And then column 4 is, where was I being dishonest? Where was I being selfish? And where was I being self-seeking? Obviously, I've already got fear. So where are all those 3 things coming up with all of those fears that I've listed? And learning how to do that initially and then doing it then completely. And so I had a crisis in West Ghent. There was all these people being mean to me and saying stuff to me, and I didn't like it. And I was like, I got out of my car and I hauled ass home, and I'm sitting in my, I'm gonna, and I just was freaking out. And then I open up my book for some reason, you know, because that's how I do things anymore, right? And I just opened it up to page 52. And on page 52 it says, I was a prey to misery and depression. Oh my God, I'm in untreated alcoholism and didn't even know it. That's untreated. And so I said, well, when am I? So I don't know how to do this. So I started off with step 1. Where am I? You know, what am I powerless over? The fear. Is it affecting me physically and mentally? Yes. How about spiritually? Yes. Am I partially insane? Yes. That's step 2. Do I believe it can be restored to sanity? And so I went through this whole process and I got into the inventory. And when I was done, I called my sponsor on the phone and I said, God damn, Bill, holy cow, blah, blah, blah. He says, I said, I'm coming over tomorrow. He goes, come next week. It's like, he'd let me sit in it for a week, which was exactly what I needed to do. Because there was more stuff that came up as I went through this process. Plus I had to get sober on God's time, not on Donald's time. I always thought that plan A, I do A, I do B, I do C, and D happens. D, I stop at D because that's my name, right? A, B, C, then D happens. And D is going to be a happening kind of guy, going to do undo stuff, right? No. So I go over and I read it to him. And then he says to me, he goes, you know what to do now? I said, go home and ask it for it to be removed. He goes, yeah. I said, it can't be that easy. He says, Donald, we either have a treatment for alcoholism or we don't. What do you believe? I got fear. I had to have faith, and faith gave me courage. I don't believe in it for a heartbeat. My experience tells me that fear is an anecdote. I mean, courage is an anecdote to fear, and faith is what gives me that courage. That they both go hand in hand. It's not because I have a lot of fear doesn't mean I have less of God. It means that I have a problem that I don't know how to deal with because I'm part of me is self-reliant and the other part, I got one foot in spiritual life and one foot in the material world. And I got to find how to get them to marry. And that's not what I was doing. So I went home and did that, and boom, I had never had that problem again. It never, ever came up in that degree. It just went away. And I had such a profound experience that it just unfolded for a week and a half, then two, and then just stuff was just going on, and it was coming inside out. It was like a flower that just all of a sudden woke up. And it wasn't me. It was just something inside of me that came up. And it just blew my mind. And so the book says, working with others, it says, our problems are of our own making. Bottles are only symbols. Then it says on page 60-something, on page 64, it says, liquor is but a symptom. I have to get down to causes and conditions. And, you know, my condition is what the fourth column addresses. My condition is I'm always dishonest. Why am I dishonest? Not because I don't know the truth, because I don't know how to tell you the truth. I could think it's too rude. I could think it's too this. I don't know how to communicate properly, so I'm afraid to talk. So that's a part, and that's a fundamental fear. That's not something that just happens because I dreamed it up. It's the fabric of my life is shot through with it. And confronting that in a fundamental way changed me totally. The same is true with self-seeking and selfishness. If I'm so fearful about what's going on in my life, I can't hear you. I don't know what you're saying. You know, I was talking to this guy probably 3 or 4 months ago, and he told me he's from Wisconsin, and I heard Michigan. So the next time I see him, he starts talking about Wisconsin, and I'm thinking he's still in Michigan. It's like, because I'm not thinking when I'm listening to people. I'm thinking about me because I'm afraid I'm going to screw something up. And I'm telling you, and then self-seeking, and I'm always running stuff down, trying to get what I want to keep me from going crazy. And so, you know, this inventory is, I think, for me, it's the crux of the matter for me as an alcoholic. The fabric of my existence is shot through with fear, and I have to learn how to do this inventory to learn how to address that side of my life. And I'll finish with another quick thing here. This prayer is called the fear prayer. It says, I ask God to remove my fear and direct my attention to what he would have me be. So if the book says in step 11 that I pause when agitated or doubtful. And when I'm agitated or doubtful, what am I? I'm fearful. I'm afraid that I don't have an answer. That's doubtful. Or I'm agitated because you just made me mad about something. And when you make me mad, behind anger is fear. Anger is a secondary emotion to fear. So when I pause and agitate or doubtful, I automatically say this prayer. Because it tells me I'm asking God to remove the fear and then to direct me to what he would have me be. Not my self-seeking, not my self-reliance, what I should be doing. And it gives me that pause and I can think about it. And then I commence to outgrow that fear. You know, here's the thing. fear in the book has a, is a little F, right? You can fill in the blank. You're screwed with the little F. But the big one is really what it is. It's a capital F for me. Everything that I've done in my life, all, you know, that didn't make me an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because when I start drinking, I don't stop. I don't want to stop. I don't care about what you say. I just don't care. Because when I get going, my brain says, I want more, and I don't stop. But how do you stay sober when you got all this junk piled up on top of you and you don't know where it comes from and how what's there? Finding that out is the most important thing. It doesn't help you in any way, shape, or form to get that self-knowledge. It doesn't help at all, except if you want to help somebody else get sober. You've gone through it. You know it. You can identify it when you see it in somebody. That's the only place it helps. But to keep you sober doesn't help at all. You got to give that stuff to God. You know, and that's the beautiful thing about 6 and 7 and doing that fear prayer. That is essentially what it is. I just give it to God. And so I think I ran through that kind of fast. Oh, yeah. One other quick thing. I had a meeting I had to go to, and I called my sponsor. I was flipping out about the meeting because I was going to go in there and be the target for my company of all this crap that was going on. And I called him on the phone. He goes, I don't do the fear prayer. I said, what is that? I never heard of that. He goes, go to page 60, whatever. Go to page 68. And it says right down there on the bottom of the page, on the bottom, next to the last paragraph, or as we say, the penultimate paragraph. It says, God, remove my fear and direct my thinking, what you have me be. And he goes, now do that prayer, go to the meeting and shut up and let the meeting unfold and see what happens. So I did the prayer. I went in. I did the next thing right, which is keep my mouth shut mostly and answer the questions as it was. And I let people yell at me. And eventually they went someplace else because I wasn't participating in their little game. And what happened? This thing evolved. I walked out of there with my mind blown about this thing. So I would recommend that anytime you're in that kind of situation, I tell my sponsees, this prayer is the boss. This one, and then asking God to remove defects of character. That's all for now. Thanks.
That was awesome. Thank you, Donald. Do the next thing right. I'm going to mash up two paragraphs here, or two sections. We're going to continue on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but overall we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we don't have enough of it, or it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? On page 69, we reviewed our conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Karen?
Sex. So basically, I've been on both extremes of the spectrum. Growing up in a very strict Christian family, you know, it was originally like, nope, like, you just, we don't talk about it. It's not done. Your grandparents just had immaculate, you know, conception. Nobody ever touches. And, you know, that's the way you live. And then alcohol got involved, and then it was the other extreme. You know, so I've been on both sides of it. And for me, a lot of it was figuring out what I really wanted out of my sexual relationships. And doing this inventory, when I did my sex inventory with my sponsor, I really thought, because again, I wasn't fully invested in being sober or being in AA when I went through my fourth step, I really thought this was my ace in the hole. I really thought this was my out. Like, I really, my whole job with my sex inventory was, I was honest, but it was to make my sponsor as uncomfortable as humanly possible. So when it said, you know, we reviewed our conduct over the years past, where have we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? I saw that in my past relationships. I was very much unjustifiably arousing jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness. And I saw my part in a lot of the situations with my exes or with people I had slept with. And, you know, I went through my whole life thinking I was just this good girl and these guys were just treating me poorly and, you know, men are just all dogs and, you know, and really when I see it on paper, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like I put myself into a lot of those situations. And then whom had we hurt? You know, I didn't want to think that I hurt anybody. I wanted to think that I, you know, it, nothing was my fault. It was all them. And I was the victim in this situation. And when I looked and I saw how I treated people, more predominantly, I was in a relationship for 3 years. It was very serious and didn't work out. That relationship in particular, when I wrote down his name on my sex inventory and I got to my part and I saw, you know, everything that I had done in those 3 years, you know, I was disgusted. And it took me 2 years to write an amends letter. And just because, you know, between me and my sponsor, you know, we decided that a letter was the best route, not to contact him directly and then to burn the letter. Just because we're not here to hurt people anymore and contacting him would have caused more chaos than good. And I remember writing my amends letter and this wasn't even very long ago. This was just a couple of months ago. I was writing this amends letter and I called my sponsor and I said, yeah, I wrote it. And she said, okay, what do you think? And I said, I'm absolutely disgusted with the person I'm describing in this letter. This is horrid behavior. And I wasn't drunk for most of it. And I said, I'm absolutely disgusted with myself. I'm absolutely disappointed in my behavior and who I was. And that's so important. That's who I was. That's not who I have to be anymore. And I had wrote in there, you know, the last time that he reached out to me was the last time that I got blacked out drunk. And I took the letter and I burned the letter. And as I watched it burn, the last words that I saw was blackout. And I was like, you know, like, I let that resentment, that pain, and that hurt keep me a prisoner, and I allowed it to pull me in as an excuse to go get drunk, to go do self-harm and self-damage through drinking. And I don't have to anymore. I don't have to be upset about it. I'm not angry with him anymore. I was for over 5 years. And I don't have to be angry anymore. I let it go. I let it go with the letter into the ashes. And I don't have to be that person anymore. And today it's totally different. Today I'm in a relationship, and today I'm able to act out what I want in a relationship. I'm able to be loving. I'm able to be kind. I'm able to be patient. I'm able to empathize and to listen and to hear what the other person has to say. It's not just about me and what I want. And it's not about compromising myself to manipulate them into doing what I want. Today, it's about partnership. Today, it's about living out how I want to be treated. And thankfully, I'm with someone where that's understood and it's reciprocated. And even today, I truly believe if I did not take these lessons learned, because that's what my sex inventory was for me, take these lessons learned, sincerely ask my higher power for forgiveness and to change the direction of what I was doing, then I really believe I wouldn't have the relationships that I have today, both within, you know, romantic and platonic. I wouldn't be able to have healthy relationships today if it wasn't for taking these lessons learned, seeing my part, and then turning around and saying, you know what? I had a part in this, and I have to act out and treat people how I want it to be reciprocated unto me, and not because I'm manipulating, not because I'm trying to get something out of them, or not because I'm trying to get them to see me in a certain light. It's how do I want to be treated and respected today, and how do I want to act, because I'm the one who has to go home and look myself in the mirror. And tonight I can, once I'm done with this, I can go to my bathroom, wash this makeup off my face, and I can look myself in the eyes and say, you know what? You did a good job, Karen. You weren't perfect. You weren't great. But today I can look myself in the eyes and have some self-respect and some dignity. And it's because of step 4 freed me from the bondage of shame and the bondage of my past. And that's all I have. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Karen. Donald, you got 2 minutes, bro. Do it.
All right. The sex inventory can also be, I mean, I want to second everything Karen said, or most of what Karen said. She did a great job there. The sex inventory I can also use for personal relations. You know, I cause hurt. I arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness at work in other relationships that I have around. So those are all things that I need to look at. It's also look at where I'm at fault. And also the ideal that I'm trying to strive for is an ideal of how I'm going to treat other people, not how I want them to treat me. I always have to remember that. It has nothing to do with them. It's everything to do with how I am to be treating other people. And that's the ideal that I have so much, I have a hard time living up to, but I do my best, and I think I do pretty good for the most part. Now, I got 2 quick stories to tell. After I did my first inventory, I went home, and I did the 6 and 7 prayer, and about half an hour back, called my sponsor when I was done. About maybe 45 minutes later, I got a phone call from an old girlfriend in Missouri I hadn't heard from in 3 years. So I got a chance to do an amends with her over the phone. I had done the sex inventory. We talked about that stuff. And I said, oh my God, how'd you find my number? Blah, blah. She said, blah. So we got off the phone. 45 minutes later, the other girlfriend in St. Louis called me, and none, they don't know each other. They didn't live in other parts of the state. It was just, and I never seen them or heard from them again, either of them. But they both called on the same day when I did my inventory. I did my fifth step. It was amazing. That's powerful stuff for me. Now, the other thing is, I was about 12, 13 years sober. I'll say 13 because it fits. There was a newcomer that came in. She was always in and out, and I'm Mr. AA. I think I might be able to help this woman. I'm living in self-deception. That's what I'm telling. I'm gonna help her and God and me, and we're gonna all be good. And so I prayed about it, and I thought about it, and I prayed about it, and I got the message. Yeah, you can do that. That'll be fine. You got a good motive behind all this. So it was February. It was cold outside. I was cleaning up my house in the morning. I'm going to go do this this afternoon. I'm a caller, a helper. And about maybe 3 hours after I made the decision to do this, I got a phone call from this woman. And she calls me on the phone. She used to be in my home group. Her and I didn't like each other very much. And she moved to Virginia Beach. And she called me on the phone. She says, Donald. She was an old Jewish lady, had a Jewish sounding voice. It was unbelievable. Donald. I thought about you. She goes, because you really got AA at heart and God and your home group. And I got a problem in my home group that I'm asked. I need to get some advice on. Can you help me? I said, sure, I can. You know, chest goes out. I'm all, yeah, I can help you. What is it? We got a guy in our home group. He keeps hitting on newcomers. I said, huh? So we talked. I know I'm over. Hang on. So we talked for 45 minutes to an hour about this problem she had. And when she hung up the phone before she left, I said, I won't tell your name. I said, you have done more for me than you will ever, ever know. I want to thank you for calling me and asking me this question. And then I never talked to her again either. And I didn't do what I was going to do. And that woman didn't stay in. She's in and out, and she's gone eventually. And I don't have that on my head. I did the right thing. And sometimes God does for me what I cannot do for myself. I pray for those miracles, those little tiny things that help me and help other people. You know, it says here that I hope, I'm convinced that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked me off from Him. But God wants me to know what it is. I've got to be able to know what it is and ask for it to be removed. That's my part of it. Thank you.
Thank you both so much. That was amazing. So we're going to virtually pass the Seven Tradition Basket again. I've placed the links to those three service entities in the chat window that I described earlier. We will skip announcements. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining this home group or need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be hanging out in this room after the meeting. Please feel free to reach out. I'm going to unmute everybody so they can give Karen and Donald a virtual round of applause.
Thanks,
man. Thank you
both so much.
And I'm going to mute everybody, but I'm going to allow you to unmute yourself if you wish. We're going to also skip the last two paragraphs on A Vision for You. And let's just have a moment of silence to do with as you wish. Feel free to unmute yourself or not. And then we'll do the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.